Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox, and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So, why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazon to the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Brandon Woodruff, my man. We will definitely take that start in your return. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, June 29th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. We didn't plan all wearing blue, purple shirts, but it looks pretty good, I gotta say, on YouTube right now. Anyway, today on the show, buy high candidates. We've got player debates, the Worryometer Wednesday, and much more. But let's jump in.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Oh my goodness gracious. Who would we like to start with? We will go with Scott.
All right. I think we need to have a little talk about Tarek Skubal. Because Tarek Skubal was bad on Tuesday. Bad for the fourth start in a row. Frank, how many earned runs has he given up in those four starts?
18.
A lot of earned runs. Here's something else I noticed about those four starts for Tarek Skubal. Well, the line, you know, just to put it out there, the line on Tuesday at San Francisco, 3 earned runs in 4 2/3 innings with 4 walks and 5 strikeouts. So here's what else I've noticed about Skubal in those four starts. He's given up 3 home runs and 11 walks in 4 starts. That's compared to in his first 11 starts, 3 home runs and 10 walks. So those two stats, basically the same total in these four starts that he struggled versus the first 11 starts when he was awesome. And so I think, you know, I don't know specifically what he's doing, but a lot of this feels like regression because his home run rate and walk rate in those first 11 starts was just such an outlier that there's no way any pitcher, you know, he's not Greg Maddux. He's not going to be able to sustain that for over the course of the full season. I will note that even with some home run and walk regression that he's seen here recently, all his ERA estimators are still excellent. The FIP, the XFIP, the XERA, so, you know, the quality of contact has been strong. The whiffs have continued even during this rough patch for Tarek Skubal. So I'm chalking it up as just a rough patch. I know he wasn't the most decisive breakout early on. We had some doubts about him, but I'm not ready to pull the plug on him after these four starts. I think if somebody in your league is freaking out about it, it might be a good opportunity to buy.
Mm-hmm. 18 earned runs over those last four starts, which we both mentioned, Scott. 8.95 ERA. Chris, Worryometer on Tarek Skubal. 1 to 10. What do you have?
I would say a 5. I mean, I'm looking under the hood at some of the pitch level data, and the biggest thing so far is his slider's just been really bad in the month of June. He hasn't gotten whiffs on it all year, actually. His highest whiff rate in a month so far with the slider was 25% in May, which is pretty mediocre for a slider. This month, it's down to 22.9. That was before today's start, with a 4.18 expected WOBA allowed. And that's really bad for a secondary pitch. You'll see guys with fastballs in that range, even relatively good pitchers. But Skubal having a fastball or a slider that's getting hit that hard is pretty concerning, especially because it was a good pitch for him last season. You know, that was kind of one of the things that he did have going for him amidst all of the changes that he made throughout the season. The slider was pretty constant, and so far it hasn't been that, especially of late. And, you know, I don't know if that's the kind of thing that you can expect him to figure out or what, but that seems to be the biggest problem, as well as his fastball is just getting hit really hard in the month of June as well. And that was a really big issue for him last season. You'll remember one of the arguments against him was he had basically, you know, some of the worst quality of contact metrics for any starting pitcher. And all of a sudden, you know, he's up to a 384 expected wOBA on contact for the season. That's still a lot better than 455 from last season, but still, you know, starting to creep up. 41% hard contact rate. And like Scott said, when the control is good, you know, he can get away with that. I think it's fair to assume that Tarek Skubal's probably always going to be, you know, someone who gives up some loud contact. That just seems to be baked into his profile at this point. But
he does have a very low xERA this year.
Yeah, 325 compared to 363 coming into today, and actually only had three hard hit balls today. So yeah, that wasn't the issue. But yeah, that, you know, it could just be one of those things where the margin for error is relatively slim. You know, if the slider, which is, you know, arguably his primary pitch at this point, is, you know, not working for him. We know his fastball is, you know, he throws pretty hard, but it's not a great pitch. So that could just be one of those things where he just could just be a relatively frustrating, inconsistent pitcher, a la maybe a left-handed Jose Berríos, where he goes through some stretches like that. He has, you know, the difference there would be Jose Berríos has three pitches where Tarek Skubal has like nine that he's thrown at the major league level. I don't know how many of them are actually good. And right now he's kind of settled on like four or five pitches that he throws. But yeah, he's definitely not right now.
All right. Just give me a yes or no here, Chris. Buy low or no thanks, bro? Tarek Skubal.
I'd be okay with buying low. That, all that being said.
All right, fair enough. Oh my goodness gracious, standout for you from Tuesday.
Luis Castillo had himself a very, very good game. I think it was 23 swings and misses in this one, most among any pitcher today. Let's see, six shutout innings, 11 strikeouts, three walks. You know, Cubs aren't a tough matchup exactly, but 19 swings and misses with his four-seam fastball. Didn't really even need to use the changeup all that much today, and actually didn't get any whiffs with the changeup. I wonder how many times that's happened in his career. But he didn't need it. And, you know, the strikeouts haven't been there so far for Luis Castillo, at least coming into this start. So this was a good sign. You know, I've been pretty confident that he was going to be a good pitcher moving forward, but this definitely makes me feel more confident.
So frustrating for Luis Castillo. You might remember about a month ago, we talked about this awesome start that he had against the Red Sox, where he threw his four-seam fastball much more than he had all season long. And we were like, maybe this is the key to Luis Castillo. Don't throw that sinker as much, because it really isn't a good pitch for him, and throw that four-seam fastball more. And lo and behold, this start against the Cubs, he does the same thing. He uses the fastball 46%. There's been two starts where he threw his four-seam over 45%. And those are his only two double-digit strikeout starts of the season. So I don't know if it's maybe just a feel thing. There are some games where he just doesn't have the feel for that four-seam, but it seems like that is the recipe for success when it comes to Luis Castillo.
I don't know that he has the same comfort level with it, since it's not a pitch he's leaned on so much in the past. But, I mean, 19 whiffs on any fastball for anyone is just that's an insane number. And if Luis Castillo can have a swing and miss fastball to pair with that bananas changeup, as Chris pointed out, he hardly threw the changeup 18 times, no whiffs on the pitch that's supposed to be Luis Castillo's everything. And he still has a 23 whiff game with 11 strikeouts. I mean, if you compare a swing and miss fastball with that changeup, then he's going to unlock a new rung on the upside ladder, if you'll excuse the mixed metaphor.
The one thing I will say is the four seamer has been a pitch that has gotten hit really hard throughout his career. You know, like I said, with Scoobal, you'll see pitches in like the 400x wOBA range. That's usually where Luis Castillo's four-seam fastball sits. It does get a lot of whiffs, 30% last year, 37% in 2020. But, you know, I can see why he goes away from it from time to time. You know, he seems to throw it more against lefties than righties, so it could be a matchups thing as well. But, yeah, it's interesting because generally speaking, I think more pitchers, I think most pitchers are better off throwing four-seamers than sinkers.
Yeah,
most pitchers, at least if, yeah, in terms of, you know, if you're looking for whiffs. But
right,
Castillo does get a lot of ground balls as well, so, you know, there's a trade-off there.
Well, and you know, to speak to that very that exact trade-off, look at Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray, mm-hmm, had another great start here on Tuesday. One hit allowed in seven shutout innings against the Orioles, struck out eight, walked three. He continued to emphasize that sinker that he kind of just broke out here in the month of June. Mm-hmm. He said it helps him keep his walks down. I don't know that that's necessarily proven true, but it has made him less vulnerable on contact. His ground ball rate is way up in the month of June. He's had it's been a very successful month for him, four awesome starts in a row. The strikeout rate is down relative to what it was in May, but the overall results are better. And I don't think the strikeout rate is enough that to worry about, because like it's still, even this reduced strikeout rate, this reduced swinging strike rate in June would still be elite, even if it's not the best we've ever seen from Robbie Ray. Yeah. And so that may be a worthy trade-off for him, limiting some of the damage on contact while also limiting some whiffs, because the stuff is so good that he's getting enough whiffs anyway. So maybe that'll prove true with Luis Castillo too, but I think generally speaking, I'd rather have the whiffs than the soft contact. I mean, that's kind of just common sense. I wonder
if it's a home roads thing. Is both of those... Yeah, well, no, with Castillo. Both those starts where he threw the four-seam fastball a bunch were on the road, at Boston, at Chicago. You know, not necessarily great pitcher's parks, but, you know, with the aforementioned lefty-righty splits thing, you know, there could be some explanation there, but it's something to keep an eye on with Castillo, just because of how good he's looked in those two starts.
That's interesting, too, because it would make sense to try and induce more ground balls pitching in Cincinnati, because obviously it's a much smaller ballpark.
All right, but it might be even better to just get a bunch of strikeouts.
Yeah.
I think we all want the strikeouts for Castillo, which for the most part, they haven't been there this season. So it was nice to see here on Tuesday. I was going to save this for later, one of our player debates, but Castillo versus Framber Valdez, it seems like pretty similar pitchers right now. I mean, Valdez doesn't get as many strikeouts, obviously, but he has been so efficient. 12 straight quality starts. He was at the Mets on Tuesday, 8 shutout innings, 6 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, and he lowers his ERA to 2.65 for the season. He's got a 67% ground ball rate. There's some trade-off here. Strikeouts for, I guess, better ratios, or at least that's what it's been so far this season.
Well, the biggest trade-off is one place for the Reds and one place for the Astros. So the biggest trade-off is wins, which is, I would say, the most valuable pitching statistic.
Scott, would you rather have, Valdez or Castillo?
You know, I generally side with upside, and I do think Castillo has more upside. And I'm stalling because I want to see how I have them ranked. And I do have Castillo ahead of Framber Valdez, but I may be inclined to change that based on what I just said. Particularly when we're already in the throes here of 2022, and we know one of those teams is really bad and one of those teams is really good. We're not guessing at it at the start of the year, so I'm going to say Valdez.
Scott, I think you've got to bump Valdez up a little bit.
I know.
At least in your head-to-head points rankings, I've got him at 24, and you've got him at 43. Mm-hmm. Not that my rankings are like gospel anything.
It's that 30 to 60 range at starting pitcher. I mean, you could ask me on one day and I'll say one thing, and on another day I'll say another thing, and it's frustrating.
The glob. Chris, who would you rather have, Valdez or Castillo?
I would rather have Valdez, actually. I think it's closer in Roto, but Valdez and points for sure.
Yeah, and you know, look, Valdez has done a better job with the whip this season, which has been an issue for him in the past. So you do love to see that level of efficiency, obviously pitching for the Houston Astros. Oh my goodness gracious, for me, I've got Brandon Woodruff, man, in this return. It was just a fantastic start. Returned with his second double-digit strikeout effort of the season. He only lasted five innings. They limited him to 76 pitches, but he had 10 strikeouts to zero walks, 17 swinging strikes in this start. You think he was fired up. His fastball velocity was up nearly 2 miles per hour on both the four seam and the sinker. 39% CSW overall, just one hard hit allowed. It was a great start for Woodruff, who, you know, we still kind of had some lingering injury concerns in the back of our minds.
Raynaud syndrome. What is that?
Yeah.
What is that? He's losing feeling in his fingers. That's a problem.
Yeah.
You're a pitcher. Your whole life's your fingers.
it's pretty scary for Brandon Woodruff. But Scott, what do you think? Would you try to buy high on Woodruff after the start? Because if he is right, he could return.
He certainly looked right. I mean,
he could be a top five starting pitcher rest of season.
He was actually the one who made me say, "Oh my goodness gracious!" Coming off the IL and just blowing, everybody away. The Rays. I had to look at who. Blowing the Rays away. 17 whiffs on 76 pitches. The fastball. Both versions of the fastball up about 2 miles per hour. And that's above like his career norm too. It's not like his velocity was lacking so much when he was struggling earlier this season. So I think he was really fired up more than anything else. And I don't know that he can sustain an average fastball velocity of 97 plus, but this is the best he's looked all season. And after a stint to take care of a health issue, I think that's a very encouraging sign.
Chris, two questions. Would you look to buy high on Woodruff after this start? And where do you foresee moving him in your starting pitcher ranks now that he's returned?
Yeah, I was just looking at that. And I think probably to number 9.
Ooh.
I had him at 16 before. Once he came on, or once we knew he was coming off the IL, I moved him up to 16. Obviously, we have the long-term concerns, although, you know, we were kind of extrapolating the Raynaud syndrome thing to, you know, potentially concerning about, you know, having some concerns about, like, thoracic outlet syndrome, because those two things have been related. Raynaud syndrome has been a leading indicator of thoracic outlet syndrome in the past for a lot of pitchers. So, you know, that concern is still there, but like, that's not why he was on the IL initially. So it's possible that this was just a one-off thing that won't be an issue moving forward. In which case, yeah, I do think Brandon Woodruff's going to be one of the best pitchers in fantasy. So moving up to number 9.
All right.
I think there's kind of a little gap between Sandy Alcantara at 8 and Shohei Ohtani / Aaron Nola at 10 and 11.
So to be clear, you'd rather have Woodruff than Max Fried?
Yeah.
Or Shane
Fried's
Bieber?
Fried's 13. So I'm not down on those guys necessarily, but I had Woodruff higher than them coming into the season. I'm not too concerned about the way he pitched early on. So it's really just the concern about the injury. And after seeing him like this, I'm not really that concerned.
I'll go 15 on Woodruff. I want him behind those guys. I think I'm going to move Robbie Ray up ahead of him with the improvements we've seen from him. And I think there's a drop off there when you go from that tier to like the Pablo Lopez, Clayton Kershaw tier. So I'll put Woodruff right there.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to wind up somewhere between, I'm looking at like SP13 just ahead of Manoah and Montas and Severino, but behind names like Gausman and Max Fried and Nola, who for the most part have been really, really good all season long.
Yeah.
An honorable mention here, oh my goodness gracious, for Patrick Corbin. What? Where? How? Vintage performance against the Pirates, 8 innings of one run ball, 12 strikeouts. He had 19 swinging strikes. His most strikeouts in a start since June 22nd of 2018. I don't think there's anything here, but What do you guys think?
I don't think so either.
There's nothing here.
Yeah. We'll see what his next start looks like. Maybe it'll start to look like something there. But no, I'm going to treat this as a one-off for Corbin right now. And there actually may be more to see from his opponent in that game, Jose Quintana, who had his second straight six-inning start with six strikeouts. The whiffs have been up in both of them. It's not the first time we've brought Quintana up as a potential fantasy asset again. Remember, he was for the first several years of his career. He's the reason the White Sox have Eloy Jimenez. And I think somebody else notable, too. Cease. They have Cease and Eloy Jimenez.
Yeah.
Because that's what Jose Quintana fetched back in the day. Quintana fell off right when the juice ball era started. And if we're thinking we're toward, you know, we're kind of in a new era now where there's not as much damage being done on contact. It might allow him to have a little bit of a rebirth if he can go deep enough into games consistently. His swinging strike rate this year is actually pretty impressive. So I think Quintana, not rushing to add him. He's on the Pirates, of course, but there may be something there.
23% rostered is Jose Quintana. We'll get to him a little bit later on, pitting him up against some other waiver wire pitchers who were out and about on Tuesday. Let's fire up this worryometer. We talked about Tarek Skubal. A lot of pitching early on here, so don't worry, we'll get to some hitters later, but there was a lot of interesting pitchers on Tuesday. Carlos Carrasco hit hard once again. He gave up six earned runs over four and a third. His last two have been against the Astros, and he's really, really gotten hit hard in both of those. His last nine starts overall, 6.20 ERA, yet everything looks pretty good for Carrasco under the hood. It's very weird. Chris, what do you think? Worryometer on Carrasco?
I think you have to be like a seven. It's possible that we're witnessing. I mean, Carlos Carrasco is, I think, much older than most people realize. He's 35, because he had a lot of injuries and he was kind of a late bloomer. So I do think you have to be concerned that he's just kind of falling off. And, you know, the strikeout rate is kind of pedestrian now, 23%. On the other hand, you know, most of the bad stuff that has happened to him this season has been against the Astros. That's a really tough matchup, especially right now where Jordan Alvarez especially looks like the best hitter in baseball, potentially. But, you know, before that, he had a pretty good four-start stretch to open June. So I don't want to overreact too much. He's not inside my top 40 anymore. He was before this. It's harder to justify that now. So, yeah.
Scott, are you still looking to hold Carlos Carrasco? He's 94% rostered, but again, an ERA over six over his last nine starts.
My faith is shaken. I was pretty high on him coming into the year, and at first that looked like a good call. And, you know, I'm sure anybody who listens regularly will know that among my favorite stats for pitchers are swinging strike rate and xFIP, and those both still look good for Carlos Carrasco. They both look a lot better than his ERA does. So just if I abide by my usual process, then I should still have faith in Carlos Carrasco. But given all the physical issues he's had, including this year, I'm not feeling great about him anymore. He's a top 60 pitcher for me, so just by virtue of that, you probably should hang on to him. But it's not, you know, if it's a shallow league and you're looking to pick up somebody else interesting, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Would you drop him for, say, John Gray if he was available?
I would. Yeah, I'm really excited about what John Gray's been doing.
All right, we will get to him in just a little bit as well. Last one on the worryometer, Carlos Rodon makes it four straight quality starts. Kind of weird to put him in this conversation because, for the most part, he pitched well. Six innings, one run, four strikeouts. However, the fastball velocity down 2.5 miles per hour in this one. Swinging strikes were down. The fastball velocity, 93.7 miles per hour. I would venture to say that is a season low. And I noticed his fastball velocity had been down a bit in his previous two starts as well. Scott, what do you think? Worryometer on Carlos Rodon?
One. I went through my worried phase with Carlos Rodon earlier this year. His velocity can fluctuate at times. But obviously he came back with a vengeance after that stretch of multiple starts where the strikeouts and whiffs were way down. And so I'm not going to I'm not going to panic this time around.
All right. Chris, even knowing, you know, the history with the shoulder and last year how Rodon's velocity really tailed off towards the end of the season, what do you make of this worryometer for him?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably made about as many starts as he did last season, right? What do you end up with, like 20 starts last year? 24, so, you know, about 60% of the way there. But, you know, he's probably not far from this point when his velocity started to fall. So it's, I can't say I'm not concerned at all. It's probably like a 2. If we get some ominous quote after the game, maybe it'll be higher. But barring a reason for his velocity having been down, I can't be too concerned, especially since he still pitched effectively. And it's not like there's been a little bit of a trend downward, but not like this. His velocity was 95.2 in his previous start. It was 93.7. So that's a big difference.
All right. Something to watch there with Carlos Rodon. By high candidates, I mentioned Woodruff earlier. Let's talk about a hitter. Finally, Marcus Semien went 3-for-4 with a double and his 8th home run. He added 3 runs and 4 RBI on Tuesday. Since May 1st, 51 games, 261 batting average, 8 homers, 10 steals. That is a 24 homer, 30 steal pace over 150 games for Marcus Semien. Scott, I would imagine it will take a decent amount to get him, but what do you think about buying high on Semien, the way he's played over the past 2 months?
I guess that's fine. I look, he's still a top 10 second baseman shortstop for me rest of season. So if you want to buy him as that, I'm going to be okay with it. I still have questions about how he's going to play in this environment, an environment that seems to be improving for hitters pretty dramatically, but still is down from what we've seen in recent years. So, you know, I would proceed with caution on Semien, but it does look like he's going to be, my guess is he's going to remain a must-start type of player going forward.
All right, fair enough. Chris, I'm going to give you a different hitter. Alex Bregman, he went 3-for-5 with an RBI. His last 18 games, he's coming around as well. 308 batting average, 3 homers, 15 runs scored, more walks than strikeouts. And he's hitting the ball much harder, 91.6 mile per hour average exit velocity. What do you think about this recent stretch for Alex Bregman? Would you look to buy high? I mean, this is a rough position at third base. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he probably is a buy for me because, you know, what you're seeing if you look under the hood is strikeout rate as good as ever, walk rate as good as ever, and the quality of contact metrics. I mean, we know that the expected stats this season aren't going to correlate as well to production as they have in the past, but he's underperforming his expected stats for the first time in his career. And that is because, you know, he's always been someone who overperformed his expected stats, largely because he has a very pull-heavy fly ball oriented swing. And that is how you get the most out of middling raw power, which is what he has. Even in an era of, you know, a de-juiced ball, I think Alex Bregman is probably someone who you can expect to at least hit to their expected stats, if not outperform them. And so I think he's probably going to keep, you know, continue to hit better. I think he's probably more like a 265, 270 hitter than the 241 hitter that he's been. So, yeah, I think Alex Bregman is definitely someone to buy.
If you can flip Tarek Skubal, I know he's on the downturn a little bit, but, you know, people will probably still look at the overall numbers. If you could turn Skubal into Bregman, is that something you would look to do, Chris?
I would definitely do that. That seems like a pretty obvious win.
Scott, do you think that's a fair trade? Do you think you need to give a better pitcher than that to get someone like Bregman?
It seems like a buy low trade for Bregman. Yeah, I agree with Chris that Bregman has better days ahead. You know, if you have a stud third baseman already, I don't know how motivated you are going to be to make that trade, but just from a pure value standpoint, Bregman's the more valuable player.
All right, two.
I think Bregman versus Arenado is a kind of interesting one at this point. They might be pretty similar players overall, tilted differently, but might be time to just move Bobby Witt ahead of Nolan Arenado in Roto and have Arenado and Bregman battling for the sixth spot.
Arenado's had a nice bounce back month, hasn't he? I feel like his numbers have
He's been better, yeah. He hasn't been as good as he was early on, but
right. I flirted with Witt ahead of him at one point, but I don't know. Arenado's still firmly ahead for me. Bregman, I think, could maybe catch up to him in points leagues. because the plate discipline is so good for Bregman. But, you know, even there, I'm going to say Arenado rest of season for now.
Arenado in June, 301 batting average, 5 homers, 17 RBI, 856 OPS. It has been a very good bounce back compared to the May, which was, he still hit 4 homers, but yeah, sub 200 batting average in that month for
Nolan Arenado. I've referenced it a couple times, so I thought to look it up. The home run to fly ball rate league wide, it was 10% in April. It was 11.4% in May. And here in June, it's 12.2%. That is a dramatic increase over the course of the season. 12.2% is still lower than what we were looking at during the juice ball era, but it's higher than pre-juice ball era. So, so it's higher than like 2015 previously. So it's still a pretty home run friendly environment. And that dramatic, and I don't think month by month home run to fly ball rate specifically changed that dramatically last year. So that might be the humidor effect that we've referred to.
So you said, what was it in June?
12.2.
So that would be
10 in April, 11.4 in May, 12.2 in June.
So for a full season, that would be the lowest since 2015.
Right.
Pre-juice ball. But it would be above every season before that, basically. So yeah, I think that feels like, I don't know, I don't want to get into it again, but it feels like a decent equilibrium has been reached in June. It just, moving forward, we might have to deal with awful April offensive numbers every year if we keep this up.
That would explain my roto teams that have flipped from pitching heavy to hitting heavy. And, my default the past couple months has been to present, sell high on pitchers to buy low on hitters. And now maybe we have to do the reverse again. Maybe we need to sell high on hitters and get some pitchers.
I think it is worth remembering all your opponents are playing with the same league. So, that doesn't necessarily explain why your hitters are.
I mean,
they still have to perform relative to other hitters.
Chris, we're on the same team, buddy. You're supposed to back me up.
Okay. Sorry.
Right. Yes, thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. All right, two other pitchers I wanted to bring up as potential buy-high candidates. Shane Baz turns in another quality start. Not a quality start. Solid start. He finishes one out away from quality. 5 2/3, 1 run, 6 strikeouts up against the Brewers. And John Gray, I mentioned earlier, now 4 solid starts in a row, 7 innings of 1 run ball, 8 strikeouts, 78% rostered. Still actually could be available in your league as a waiver wire ad. Scott, what do you think about buying high potentially on Shane Baz and John Gray?
Look, I don't know exactly what that means. I mean, buying high is I get that it's kind of cute phrasing, but obviously just from if we're taking it literally, it's always the wrong thing to do, right?
Yeah, unless you think that these players are going to continue to perform well, and
don't be such a pedant, Scott.
But then you're not really buying high. I think John Gray may be having the breakout season that a lot of us hoped he would coming out of Colorado. It took a while to get there because he's kind of had to rethink his entire arsenal now that he gets more movement on his pitches again, and because he had some health issues early on that kept setting back his progress. But last 6 starts now for John Gray, 2.39 ERA, 1.01 WHIP, 10.5 K per 9. And one of those 6 starts was pretty bad too, and he still managed to have those numbers. Strong swinging strike rate, the slider especially, a pitch that is known to get flattened at Coors Field sometimes. The slider especially has been getting a lot of whiffs lately for John Gray. And I'm pretty excited about it. Somebody, interestingly enough, somebody in the podcast for the People League bought high John Gray from me for Kyle Wright. I hesitated. I think they're both part of that 30 to 60 glob at starting pitcher that I referred to. I ended up taking the deal. I ended up taking Kyle Wright, but it may be a situation where he kind of sold high on Kyle Wright and bought high on John Gray, and it may work out for him.
Fair enough. We'll see. Chris, I did just want to ask quickly about Shane Baz. Look, the numbers haven't been eye-popping so far, but considering that he missed so much time early, I don't think he's going to be limited later on in the season, and that just seems very appealing to me. And I think he might have more upside than people like Jose Berríos or maybe even a Tarek Skubal, right? So I kind of like the idea of buying Shane Baz now before he really gets rolling. What do you think?
I mean, he's already rolling.
Yeah.
He's got 19 strikeouts to four walks. He's allowed two earned runs over his past three. Those are his stats over the past three starts. He basically had a bad start against the Twins to open his season, and the three starts since then have been exactly as advertised. I think he's an exceptionally talented pitcher. Everything that we've seen from him has been as advertised. The slider is absurdly good pitch, 47% whiff rate. So, yeah, I think Shane Baz, you mentioned Jose Berríos. I've got Shane Baz at 44 entering this start in my Roto rankings. Jose Berríos down at 30 or up at 37. I might just make that move.
Yeah.
I might just do that now.
Yes.
Because, like, I think Berríos is going to be better than he has been moving forward. I think that kind of goes without saying. But even the best version of Jose Berríos, I don't think is going to get the kind of swings and misses that Shane Baz can. So, you know, in a points league, I think Berríos probably has the edge just because if both are good, Berríos is going to have a lot more volume. But I think Baz is just going to be awesome moving forward.
I mean, the biggest drawback to drafting Baz back before we knew he was going to miss the start of the season with injury was, okay, look at his innings history in the minors. The Rays are going to have to be really careful with him.
Yeah.
But now he's missed a third of the season, so they're not going to have to be.
Yeah, but it's still, it's less, like he's, you know, not going to throw 105 pitches in too many starts. I would guess, you know, probably not any starts. So I think you're probably going to have more.
I mean, they've been more aggressive with Shane McClanahan than I thought they were going to be. So I don't know.
Yeah. Have they been aggressive with him with pitches or just, is it like the one Blake Snell season where he was just so effective that he was pitching deep into games just because he was pitching so efficiently? That's the one I don't know.
So,
yeah, only one start with 100 pitches for McClanahan.
Right. I mean, he's consistently over 90, but yeah, he has been very efficient. And for what it's worth, Shane Baz threw 95 pitches in this start, and it's only his fourth start back. So, you know,
I don't think he's going to be 80 start pitches every start. I think he's going to be between 90 and 100. There are going to be more opportunities for Berríos to go push over 100 pitches than for Baz. So if you're talking about a points league where, you know, that could be the difference between a 5-inning start and a 6-inning start or a 6-inning start and a 7-inning start, I do think Berríos probably has the edge, but I would bet on Baz having better ratios than Berríos and more strikeouts the rest of the
season.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, before we hit the break, just have a few reminders here. Sign up for our newsletter if you haven't already, cbssports.com/newsletters. You just click on the little FBT logo once you get there, punch in your email address, and then you will get a newsletter in your inbox every morning for free. So why not sign up? And if you are playing fantasy football, make sure to sign up for the FFT newsletter as well. Chris does a great job with that. And Dan Schneier is the one most of the time handling our fantasy baseball newsletter. A programming update. I will be out for this Friday's podcast, Monday next week, and then Tuesday, I'm getting married. It's official. Woo! It's happening this weekend. So Chris and Scott will hold it down. On Friday, they'll have a normal preview of the following week, and then they'll have a weekend recap on Monday and a mailbag, which will come out on Tuesday. Let's take a break.
You know what that means.
What up?
We weren't invited to the wedding.
Well,
I'm going. I'll be there. But it was kind of last
Chris
minute
was.
Thing.
Oh.
So,
I didn't think you would travel to New York, Scott.
I gotta go.
I wouldn't. That was going to be my follow-up. I wouldn't have gone anyway.
I was going to say, let's just end the podcast here.
It's only like a 10-minute drive for me.
That became
so
extra
easier.
Awkward. I was only looking for minimum awkward. That's fine.
All right. Well, with that, let's take a break, and we will be back right after this.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
The news and notes. Fernando Tatis came out happy from a doctor's appointment. I wish I was happy after every doctor's appointment, and is expected to be swinging a bat at full speed within the next 2 weeks. We don't have an official timeline, but late July, early August sounds like it makes sense for Fernando Tatis. Ronald Acuña has now missed two straight after fouling a ball off his foot on Saturday. Mookie Betts will begin baseball activities Wednesday. He is on the IL with a fractured right rib. Max Scherzer now scheduled to make his next rehab start Wednesday at AA, which means he likely won't return to the Mets this weekend. Maybe could be back early next week. The big news from Tuesday, Kenley Jansen placed on the IL due to an irregular heartbeat, something that he has dealt with in the past. The Braves are optimistic that he'll be ready to return around the minimum amount of time. Doesn't necessarily mean the minimum, but hopefully close to it. And what do you know, the Braves get a save opportunity first game without him, and AJ Minter was the one who picked up the save. I will note that Will Smith pitched in 4 games last week, including both on Saturday and Sunday. Scott, what do you think moving forward? Who gets the saves here, AJ Minter or Will Smith?
Well, since it is hopefully a short-term absence for Jansen, I don't know that it matters that much. I would guess if they had a save chance tomorrow, it would go to Will Smith, because now AJ Minter's worked 3 of the past 4. So they've both been worked a lot recently. I guess Smith a little more. Minter has actually been the Braves' best reliever this year, better than even Jansen, and had usurped Will Smith as the eighth inning guy. So I kind of wondered if, you know, since Will Smith kind of after a perfect postseason got bumped from the role, so they could sign Jansen, if Snitker would give him the first shot to close just out of loyalty. But they'll probably split it. They'll probably split it for 2 weeks, and then Jansen will be back, and that'll be that.
All right. Liam Hendricks is scheduled to throw a simulated game on Friday. Tyler O'Neill could begin a rehab assignment next Monday or Tuesday. He's on the IL with a hamstring injury. Jazz Chisholm was removed Tuesday after aggravating his back injury. He missed the previous 2 games with back spasms.
This one's concerning. There was a quote after the game. I think one of the reporters asked him, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how's the pain? And he was like, yeah, it's up there. So I wouldn't be surprised if this ended up being an IL stint for Chisholm.
Yeah, it would not surprise me either. And Jazz has kind of fallen back here in June, so maybe he's been playing through it for a while. Jorge Polanco was activated for game 2 of Tuesday's doubleheader and promptly hit his 8th home run of the season. We can use it, so hopefully Jorge Polanco gets rolling. Michael Brantley went to the IL with right shoulder discomfort. Jake Myers started in center field with Chaz McCormick in left. Scott, do you have any interest in Jake Myers in deeper leagues? I saw a few people touting him this weekend.
He was pretty interesting last year when he emerged as the starting center fielder and had great numbers in the minors last year. So, yeah, I have him stashed away in a 15-team roto league. I have him in the 2014 Scott White Dynasty League. I'm not counting on him being useful, but certainly in that lineup, from a guy who's shown power and speed in the past, there's a chance. There's a chance, and I'd like to see it play out if I have an extra spot for him.
Tyler Glass now threw a bullpen session, his first since undergoing Tommy John surgery last August. Chris, are we expecting anything from Glass now this season?
I mean, I could see maybe he comes back in the bullpen, but I'd be pretty surprised if he was making an impact for fantasy as a starter this year.
Agreed. Zach Eflin was placed on the IL due to a bruised right knee, but is expecting a minimum stay. Zach Davies placed on the IL with right shoulder inflammation. Seiya Suzuki getting close to a rehab assignment. He's been on the IL since May 30th with a sprained left index finger. Tommy Pham scratched due to lower back stiffness. Gleyber Torres said he expects to return on Thursday. Austin Meadows transferred from the COVID IL to the 10-day IL with strains in not one, but both of his Achilles. I don't even know how that happened. So I hope you're right, Austin Meadows, but it seems like a kind of weird, fluky injury. Nate Pearson will be shut down for 3 to 4 weeks due to a strained right lat, which, oh, man, I traded for him, I think, last year in the Scott White Dynasty League, and, man, that was a bad trade. So, oh, man, I hope he does something eventually, but it's been a rough go. White Sox prospect Lenin Sosa was sent back to AAA by the White Sox. Mentioned earlier some player debates we did for Amber Valdez versus Luis Castillo. I wanted to bring up two pitchers who went on Tuesday. Scott, you spoke about Robbie Ray, what he's been doing recently. Frankie Montas has been great all season long, picked up his 10th quality start of the season. He was at the Yankees, 6 innings, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts, and the ERA down to 3.20 for Frankie Montas. Scott, what do you think? With the recent improvements for Robbie Ray, upside might be a little bit higher. Where do you go, Ray or Montas?
I go Ray. I like Montas a lot. I like that he got back to throwing his splitter more in this start. Hopefully he's regaining confidence in that. But he pitches for the A's, and his record is 3-8, you know, because of that, as well as he's pitched. I actually got offered him today in the original podcast league, the 12-team points league, where pitching is favored. It was a bunch of names in the deal, but the two biggest pieces were Montas coming my way and Schwarber going the other way. I couldn't do it. Couldn't pull the trigger.
That is the format where record matters a little more, because you lose points for losses in addition to not getting points for wins. So, you know, that's, I guess that impacts him a little more. Look, I have both these guys in my top 21. Yeah. Montas is 19, Ray is 21. So I think they're both awesome. But I'll go with Montas with a slight edge, but it's effectively a tie.
All right, how about two outfielders here? Charlie Blackmon, this is kind of a floor versus ceiling debate, if you still think that Cody Bellinger has a ceiling. But Charlie Blackmon went 4-for-5 with a double, 2 runs scored on Tuesday. In the month of June, he's been very good. 311 batting average, 5 homers, 1 steal. Not hitting the ball as hard, but the results have been there for Charlie Blackmon. And then Cody Bellinger on the other side, he's hitting 211. He's got a sub-700 OPS. But he has 9 homers, he has 9 steals, still has a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. I just don't know that we're ever going to get back to the player he once was. Chris, what do you think? Maybe the high floor versus the potential ceiling, Charlie Blackmon versus Bellinger.
I'll still take Bellinger, but man, it's rough. I don't really understand, like, the quality of contact for Bellinger's actually improved this season. 397 expected wOBA on contact. The problem is his wOBA is 300, or his expected wOBA is only 300, because he's striking out 30% of the time all of a sudden. Career high strikeout rate after even the bad 2020, his strikeout rate was very good. Last season, 27% was much worse, but this year it's gotten even worse. And I'm not sure I understand why. Like, his chase rate is a little worse, but his whiff rate is a little better. I think better days are ahead for Cody Bellinger. I do view him as a buy low, and the fact that he's hitting the ball better gives me some hope. But man, it doesn't. I don't feel good about it.
Scott, I was gonna say it could be format dependent. Go with Blackmon in a points league, Bellinger in a roto league. But looking more into it, Blackmon could be better in 4 out of 5 categories compared to Cody Bellinger. What do you think?
Yeah. Look, if we were drafting for 2023, the season ended today, we're drafting for 2023. Give me Bellinger. Give me the upside. But at this point in the season, I feel like I can plug in Blackmon and feel pretty good about what I'm getting. While Bellinger, you know, it just feels... It's... shooting for the moon. And I think I'd rather have Blackman at this point. I'm just not confident at all in Bellinger's ability to turn it around, at least not mid-season.
Fair enough. Let's rank a few waiver wire pitchers. Zach Plesac makes it 6 quality starts in a row, 1 earned run or fewer in 4 of those starts. He had 17 swinging strikes on Tuesday against the Minnesota Twins. He's 70% rostered. Jose Quintana, Scott, you mentioned back-to-back quality starts. He was at the Nationals, 6 innings, 1 run, 14 swinging strikes. He's 23% rostered. Ross Stripling has now allowed 2 earned runs or fewer in every start since rejoining the Blue Jays rotation. He is 62% rostered. And then Dean Kramer. I don't know what Dean Kramer is doing, but he's doing it. And really, all the Orioles pitchers, they've been pretty good. At the Mariners, 7 shutout, 4 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts in this one. He's only 11% rostered. Scott, how do you rank these 4? Plesac, Quintana, Ross Stripling, Dean Kramer.
You may have just done it. That may be the ranking for me. I don't love any of them. I kind of made a case to keep an eye on Quintana. Plesac, this stretch of quality starts has been... I think what's really made me take a closer look at it is the last 2. He's thrown a lot more sliders. It's his best swing and miss pitch, and they've been decent strikeout starts. So maybe that's something Zach Plesac can build off of, though I've obviously gotten burned by that in the past and am reluctant to dip my toe into those waters again. So those are my favorite 2. Stripling's been effective, but, and his ground ball rate's up. I just
got too nice to say it. So I'll say it. These guys all stink. None of them are in my top 80 starting pitchers. None of them are likely to be anywhere close to my top 80 starting pitchers anytime soon. I have almost no interest in any of them.
Well, I want to speak on Kramer specifically because the commenters have been talking about him all show. I think everything I said about Tyler Wells yesterday, another Orioles pitcher, applies to Kramer, where there's nothing you can really point to in the stat line and say, okay, this is why this guy's succeeding. He doesn't miss a lot of bats. Fly ball rate is very high. I think he's just managed to avoid the long ball for now, but that's going to catch up to him sooner than later. So I would steer clear of Kramer.
Look, sometimes these things happen, and that's not to say that like Kramer isn't decent. That's not to say that Zach Plesac, like, these guys are all talented, but to a certain extent, there's a bit of a random number generator aspect to, Major League Baseball results. I know that's something that you say when you're a stat nerd and these guys are human and all that stuff, but like, also sometimes these stretches just happen and guys pitch well and manage to get themselves out of tough spots with good pitches, but in ways that largely are not sustainable over the long run. And I think that's the case with all of these guys, where like Plesac can be decent at times, but he gets hit really, really hard and he doesn't get enough strikeouts to make up for it. So eventually it's going to catch up to him. I don't think there's much, even in 15 team leagues. Like, I've got Plesac in TGFBI and I've been starting him, but I'm not happy about it. I'm happy with the results so far, but I think moving forward, he's going to be more hurtful than helpful.
Fair enough. Scott, which pitcher do you dislike more for fantasy, Sonny Gray or Zach Gallen? Because, man, like, trying to figure out either of those pitchers, it is just not fun to do. Gallen was going up against the Padres. No Manny Machado in the lineup. What does he do? He gives up 6 runs over 5 innings pitched, coming off of one of his best starts of the season when he had double-digit strikeouts. So I don't really know that there's anything to add. It's just Zach Gallen's frustrating.
It's the Spider-Man meme. Sonny Gray is my longtime nemesis as an analyst, and I think Zach Gallen is that for the new millennium. And I will say this about Zach Gallen: I traded him. I unloaded him. That's unfair. I traded him in 2 dynasty type leagues this offseason, and nothing I have seen from him this year makes me regret that. I feel like if I have Zach Gallen, I'm calling him Sonny Gray now. If I have Zach Gallen in a redraft league, I'm waiting for the next start like his previous one, that great 11 strikeout effort. And I'm choosing to shop him right after he does that because I just don't want him to be my headache anymore.
All right. What about hitters off the waiver wire? Where to add any of these names, if anywhere? Andrew McCutchen heating up over his last six games. He's got 8 hits, 3 homers, only batting 248 overall. He's also got 5 steals, which is kind of interesting. 36% rostered. Chris, would you like to add McCutchen anywhere? Maybe 5 outfielder leagues if you need one?
Yeah, I mean, I actually kind of feel like there are, you know, not too many outfielders right now, but there have been enough interesting outfielders getting called up, especially with Jaron Duran and Riley Green and Alex Kirilloff, that I'd rather have any of those guys over McCutchen.
Yeah, for sure.
And that makes me think that McCutchen's probably less of a priority in a 5 outfielder league, but he's okay. You know, he's fine to have around.
Are we watching the Elias Diaz comeback story? He went 2-for-4 with his 5th home run, and over his last 7 games, he's batting .348. 3 home runs during that span, has started 7 of the last 9 games for the Rockies. Scott, 2 catcher leagues. Are you looking to re-add Elias Diaz if he was dropped?
I think he's fine for 2 catcher leagues, but I'm not really missing him either.
All right.
He's fine.
Coming right back to you, Scott. Josh H. Smith. If you're looking for Josh Smith of the Rangers on the CBS website, it's Josh H. Smith. He's now let off 2 games that he has, 2 games in a row that he has started, both against righties. I know you mentioned, Scott, something about a calf injury that he suffered in this game.
Bruised calf.
Yep. But if he's leading off for this lineup, not that it's a great lineup, but hitting right in front of Semien, Seager, Adolis Garcia, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I brought that up on the Monday show, that sounds like what they're looking to do with him. And you look at his minor league track record, a guy walks a lot, steals a lot of bases. That sounds like things that managers like from a leadoff hitter. So it makes sense. And Ezekiel Duran is out of the picture now. So provided this bruised calf doesn't put Josh Smith back on the IL, I think he is somebody who deserves more attention than he's getting.
Hitting leftovers, Matt Olson had a double dong on Tuesday. He is now up to 12 home runs, and his launch angle is way up in the month of June. So earlier on, he was hitting too many ground balls. It seems like he has reversed course there. Hopefully more power.
He hears Braves fans pining for Freddie Freeman. Oh. Needs to change the narrative.
This Freddie Freeman story, it's just, it's getting more and more interesting, huh, Scott? I mean, your theories throughout the offseason, now it looks like Freddie Freeman is changing his representation.
Well, I understand not everybody's followed the reporting as closely as I have, but like, yeah, I mean, this has been known for a while now. Like Freddie Freeman has intimated in the past that he wasn't clear enough in expressing his desires to his agent. I haven't seen an exact quote, but that's been reported already. And so it was kind of like, well, what gives then? Why haven't you fired your agent? And now he has. And this was, of course, after a weekend back in Atlanta where he was crying every time he was on camera, basically. And it's
downright rude to Matt Olson. Braves trade for Matt Olson. All of a sudden, who even cares about Freddie Freeman? Matt Olson's better. And all of a sudden, Freddie Freeman comes back, and everyone's like, wow, he never should have left.
Yeah.
Matt Olson, well, he's hearing the Braves fans.
Freddie.
He's heating up.
Matt Olson feels like dad's second wife right now, where like he's nice enough. And you want to be nice to him.
Dad's second wife bought me a GameCube. So there's something to be said for that.
You know he's going to be around for the long haul, so you want to make nice, but at the same time,
that part, not so much.
Of who's not there. So, yeah, it's...
Matt Olson's not my real dad.
He's not your second wife either. Anyway, Yordan Alvarez went 3-for-3 with his 23rd home run. He's now batting .321. He is amazing. Randy Arozarena went 2-for-4 with 2 more steals, now up to 15 steals overall. And since May 1st, he's hitting .283, 7 homers, 12 steals. Arozarena, quite good. Tommy Edman went 2-for-4 with a double and his 19th stolen base. Dylan Carlson, another strong game, went 2-for-4 with a double, his 4th stolen base, 61 percent rostered. Not that I don't think anyone here wants to talk about Dylan Carlson anymore. I tried to bring him up yesterday, but probably not that interesting. Vinny Pasquantino went 0 for 4 in his debut, did have two batted balls over 98 miles per hour, zero strikeouts. Like to see that. Jonathan India went 2 for 5 with his second home run, and maybe, just maybe, Coors Field can get Max Muncy back on track, who went 2 for 4 with a double and his sixth home run.
Yeah, that home run was 102 miles per hour, and the double was less than 100. So, I don't know. Like he occasionally has these games where he's like, maybe this is the start of something, but I still don't feel great about Max Muncy.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he puts together a good series in Colorado, and maybe you try to flip him for something. That is Max Muncy. The call to the bullpen for the Twins. Emilio Pagan is bad. He entered in the eighth inning with a one-run lead, promptly gave up two runs, took his fifth blown save and third loss. I think we are getting dangerously close to Yoan Duran just being used as a closer, or at least I hope so. For the Guardians, Emmanuel Clase on the other side of that game picked up his 18th save, his 11th in the month of June. For the Nationals, Tanner Rainey picked up his 11th save. For the Yankees, Clay Holmes gave up two hits and an unearned run, but picked up his 13th save of the season. Enjoy it while you can, Clay Holmes. I'm just kidding, kind of. For the Red Sox, they were up 5-4 entering the ninth inning. Tyler Danish started the inning. He gave up a hit and a walk. He was relieved by Hansel Robles, who then gave up a game-tying RBI single to Bo Bichette and then a walk-off single to Vlad Jr. If only they had Tanner Houck in this game. For the Brewers, Josh Hader struck out the side for his 23rd save. For the Cardinals, they were up 5-3. Gallegos used in the eighth. Ryan Helsley then picked up his sixth save of the season. For the Reds, Hunter Strickland gave up a hit but picked up his fourth save and has the last two saves for the Reds. He's 5% rostered. Yeah, this one's a tough one, man, because Strickland has pitched better as of late. I think in deeper leagues, if you need saves, you could look at him. But Scott, as we've mentioned, Alexis Diaz could be activated on Friday. So I don't know whether to act on this or not.
I'm not the closer whisperer, so I don't know who is, but I've been, my guess is right now in the latest bullpen report that was up on the site Tuesday is I'd rather roster Alexis Diaz than Hunter Strickland, despite David Bell's suggestion that he's going to turn to Strickland more in the ninth inning. I just think the gap in production is too much to overcome. And I don't know how long it'll take, but I think Alexis Diaz will eventually be the one getting the majority of those chances.
For the Giants, Camilo Doval recorded the final four outs for his 12th save. And for the Mariners, Paul Sewald pitched a clean ninth for his seventh save of the season. 39% rostered. If you need saves, some strikeouts, Paul Sewald widely available. To stream or not to stream, let's start with Wednesday. Mitch Keller at the Nationals. Paolo Espino versus the Pirates. Zach Greinke versus the Rangers. Dane Dunning at the Royals. Chris Flexen versus the Orioles. Dylan Bundy at the Guardians, Andre Pallante versus the Marlins, and Justin Steele versus the Reds.
Keller, I think, is number one. And then Dunning is probably number two. Flexen and Steele are okay, but I don't love them.
It sounds about right.
None of them are that exciting. I'd probably go Dunning one, but whatever.
All right, on Thursday, we have Chris Archer at the Guardians, Adrian Hauser at the Pirates, JT Brubaker versus the Brewers, Graham Ashcraft at the Cubs, Kyle Hendricks versus the Reds, and Mitch White versus the Padres.
Ashcraft is definitely my choice here. I had him in the 10 sleeper pitchers for this week after really strong effort his last time out, that 100-mile-per-hour cutter.
I could see Kyle Hendricks having a very good start in this one.
Yeah, he's been better since rejoining the rotation. I think Adrian Hauser, you know, whatever. He's the ultimate streamer, and this is the right matchup to do it in. We're going to wrap there. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
New CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost,
everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay. Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.